I don't know if you remember this, but in 2002, a 14-year-old girl named Elizabeth Smart was abducted from her bedroom at Knife Point in Salt Lake City, Utah. In order to help find their daughter, the Smart family offered $250,000 as a reward to anyone who could provide information leading to Elizabeth's safe return. The police asked anyone with a credible tip to leave it on a hotline. And by the end of the case, the police had fielded over 16,000 tips, 9,000 of which came from self-proclaimed psychics, or people whose information had come to them in their dreams. Then, just 1 year later in 2003, another teenage girl, this time a 16-year-old named Amanda Berry, was walking home from her job at Burger King in Cleveland, Ohio. But she never made it home. When the police investigation turned up a little, Berry's mother, Luana Miller, turned to celebrity psychic Sylvia Brown, who at the time appeared almost weekly in the top-rated daytime hit, The Montel Williams Show. When Miller asked the psychic about her daughter, Brown told her very matter-of-factly that she was not alive. Amanda Berry's mother died 2 years later, never knowing that Brown was wrong.
You need police, fire, or ambulance?
I'm the police.
Okay, and what's going on there?
I've been kidnapped, and I've been missing for 10 years, and I'm here. I'm free now.
Okay, and what's your address?
Indeed, Amanda Berry, like Elizabeth Smart, had been abducted and held captive. Smart was found by police after 9 months, and Berry escaped by herself after 10 years. These cases are just two examples in a long line of psychic involvement in missing person cases. And really, not a lot seems to have changed between 1967 and today. Because one of the most interesting things about the Jim Thompson case to me is that after he went missing, nearly 120 psychic detectives from all over the world came forward to offer their services, often hoping to cash in on a financial reward or to earn international acclaim if their visions proved accurate. So today, I want to sit down with DJ Grothy, who was a professional magician and psychic entertainer who later became a professional skeptic, appearing on shows such as Joe Rogan Questions Everything. If you ever wanted to know the specific tactics that unscrupulous psychics employ to get emotionally vulnerable people to part with their money, then this is the episode for you. From 13 Media, I'm Trisha Jenkins, and this is Worldwide, The Disappearance of the Thai Silk King. So after Jim Thompson went missing, roughly 120 psychics came forward from both the East and the West to offer their help in the case. For example, a Thai woman came to Thompson's silk company in Bangkok, claiming that she had special powers to see things that remained hidden to the average person. She convinced the office employees to give her a room where she hung a giant white sheet on the wall and then lit some candles. She told them in her best dramatic voice that when her power started to kick in, they would be able to see Jim up on the sheet, just like he was on TV. But when the seance completed and the employees told her that they actually hadn't seen a thing, she said she couldn't believe it. She clearly watched Jim being held at gunpoint by two unknown men. Malaysian bomos, or shamans, also got into the game. One bomo in Tanarata, the town where Jim went missing, declared that Thompson was being held by the Great Spirit of the Forest, who was upset over the bloodshed that had taken place in the area in the decades prior during the Malaysian War of Independence, or what is more commonly referred to as the Emergency. A second BOMO said that he too had contacted the spirit world, making connection with Rajakumar, or the King of the Spirits. And that spirit had told the BOMO that Jim actually had never entered the jungle and was somewhere else entirely. But undoubtedly, the most famous psychic celebrity to get involved in the case was Peter Hurkos. He got his start as a stage magician and a psychic entertainer, but started claiming that when he was about 30 years old, he suffered a head trauma after falling off a ladder and that his psychic powers were now real. Hurkos was invited to come to the United States in 1956 by a pair of psychologists in Maine who wanted to study Hurkos's ESP and eventually declared that his powers were real. Hurkos then went on to work with the police in both the Charles Manson murders and the case of the Boston Strangler. When Jim's sister Eleanor grew increasingly frustrated with the police's ability to find out what had happened to her brother, she eventually hired Hurkos and his assistant Stephanie Farb. She gave them an undisclosed but rather large payment, and they agreed to take the case. They traveled to Bangkok and then later to the Cameron Highlands in Malaysia to help find out what had happened to Jim. And by the end of the visit, Hurkos declared that he knew what had happened to Jim Thompson. But before we get to his conclusions, I want to introduce DJ Grothy, a professional skeptic who believes that the Thompson case has lessons to teach modern audiences. Lessons about the allure of psychics and the dangers that they present when they get involved, even peripherally, in missing person cases. And the first thing that DJ will tell you is that not all psychics are the same, either in their methods or in their ethics.
Broadly speaking, there are three categories or types of psychics. One, there are the shut eyes. Two, there are the Romani, or I call them the storefront psychics with the neon signs, and you go in and you get a reading. And then there are psychic detectives or other sort of celebrity psychics. And they each get to the psychic trade in different ways. So I think that all psychics are fake, but that not all psychics are frauds. And the shut eyes are the type of psychics I don't think are frauds. So why are they called shut eyes? That's because they shut their own eyes to the fact that they're not real. So they're fake, but not fraudulent. They are self-deceived. A lot of these psychics become psychics through the New Age movement. You've ever been to a psychic fair? Those people don't do magic tricks. They genuinely think they're helping people. They give, you know, whatever comes to mind when they're talking to someone. They think it's psychic powers. Their sitters think it's psychic powers. Instead, it's just niceties, and whether or not it's true, sometimes people benefit from it. I'll talk about how ultimately it's still harmful, but that's shut eyes. Peter Hurkos was not a shut eye. Okay, second category, the Romani or the storefront psychics. Romani, they used to be called gypsies. These are clans of people who work on the outskirts of normal society. Police departments in mid-century would consider the storefront psychics part of organized crime. So you go into a neon sign storefront, it says psychic or astrologer or something like that. You sit down, you pay your $60, and it's a known scam. The people who engage in that are criminals. And aside from just using words like a New Age psychic would at a psychic fair, they will do magic tricks.
DJ says that one of the most common tricks for a psychic of this order is to ask their sitter, who feels like they've had bad luck following them around, to bring in some money wrapped up in maybe a towel. The psychic then takes the towel and performs a magic trick over it, where it appears as if a curse is being removed. And the sitter is told that as long as they don't open the towel back up until they get home, that the curse will have been permanently removed. But when the sitter gets back home and unwraps the towel, you guessed it. The psychic has swapped out the money for a stack of paper. And the sitter has now become a victim of a crime. and many of them will never report it because they are simply too embarrassed to admit that they fell for a scam.
These are criminals that, you know, there are long prison sentences for people who are convicted of this sort of fraud. Hercos was also not one of these sorts of psychics. He is what I consider a celebrity psychic, these psychic detectives, which can be a mix of the other two, but they generally don't engage in physical trickery or magic tricks, with one big exception in the 20th century, Uri Geller. Instead, people like Hercos, the celebrity psychic Sylvia Brown, others, they use tricky psychological methods, but not something physical or tangible that a police officer could say, that's fraud, so I'm arresting you.
Some of these tricky psychological methods were put on display when Peter Hercos went to Thailand to first help solve Jim's disappearance. Hercos started by talking with employees of Jim's Thai silk company and former military and CIA officers who knew Jim. Some of these folks were skeptical of Hercos's power, but through the practice of cold readings, Hercos was able to convince many of them that his powers were real. In William Warren's standout book, Jim Thompson, The Unsolved Mystery, he notes that Hercos met Lieutenant Horgan, an assistant to the Chief of Staff of the U.S. Military Assistance Command. Horgan gave Hercos a photograph from his wallet, and that without looking at it, Hercos was able to give a variety of details about the person in the photograph, all of which Horgan affirmed were accurate as far as he knew. Another similar reading was done for Jim's close friend, General Black, who did not confirm that all of Hercos's impressions were correct, but that indeed several of them were. According to DJ, psychic detectives often use cold readings, a term used for a set of methods that are employed to make it seem like a psychic knows something about someone without that person having been told those specifics. One of the methods commonly employed in cold readings occurs when psychics simply throw out a series of statements, usually one right after the other, and then they wait for the person who is being read, or who industry insiders call the sitter, to react and to clue them in on which statements are hits. And you can hear this in a cold reading that Hercos did over the radio in the 1960s for a show called Open Mind with Bill Jenkins. And as you listen, I want you to pay attention to how many things Hercos seems to get right and how many things he seems to get wrong, and how at the end of the cold reading, the sitter chooses to focus only on the things that Hercos was accurate about.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind on this Saturday night at 20 minutes past 9 o'clock. Our guest is Peter Hercos, and as you can see, it'll be kind of a stimulating evening. And I hope all of you have a chance to get in. We'll try to get to as many of you as possible.
Good evening, Peter. How are you?
Fine. I feel fine.
I'm like everybody else. I think I have a curiosity about what's going to happen to me down the road.
What do you have to do with an attorney?
At this point, nothing.
But you had an attorney before.
Yeah, a long time ago.
I don't talk about 2 years ago. I talk many years ago.
Right.
I want you to have a completely physical check by the doctor. When was the last time you went to the doctor?
A long time.
It's about 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Let me concentrate.
You're Herb.
I'm Herb. I don't know if I should be saying anything.
Herb, yeah. I see you working. You're not without the job.
Right.
And it's a job where you work for quite a long time. I'm not talking about 6 months or 8 months.
No, I've only been there about 8 months at this point.
Yeah, but I see no changing yet. Don't quit yet. Did you was planning to quit?
Yes.
The time is not there. I will say April. You are not happy what you are doing right now, let me tell you.
That's true.
And I see 1, 2, 3 in the family. How many people are in the family? I'm not talking about 5. I see 3. How many people?
I have 2 kids and myself.
That are 3, right?
Right.
But I don't see your wife.
That's true.
Did she ever went to a psychiatrist?
Have I?
No, your wife.
Yes, she did.
There is no hope and there is no return between you and your wife. You are not living with your wife, right?
No, I'm not.
No. Love her, but stay away so far as possible.
So far, you hit that right on the head.
Yeah. Do you know that you have a scar on your leg?
Yes, I do.
I see it too. And you almost drowned when you was young. You couldn't breathe. I'm not talking about water. I'm talking about like a kind of hyperventilation. Can you remember that?
No, I can't.
22 years old, that time?
No.
And I see a changing in your job, I would say in about 4.5 months. And I don't see you married for quite a long time.
Oh, bless your heart.
Oh, my God. I see you do your own cooking and you hustle around and I see your life.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Very good. Interesting. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Was it pretty much on target with your herb?
Without getting into details, the area about my wife, very much so.
Strange that he can do that, isn't it?
It is. It is very strange.
As you can hear, Peter Hurkos wasn't really a sophisticated cold reader. He essentially relied on a shotgun approach of just saying a lot of things, and then he would just wait for his audience member to basically do some of the interpretive work for him. Another tactic of cold readings, though, occurs when a psychic says in one sentence two very opposite things.
So if I'm giving you a reading right now, Tricia, I'd say, I can sense from your aura or your tarot cards or the spirits or whatever it is, Tricia, I see that you are the sort of person who likes being around your good friends, and you're one of those kind of people who really knows how to have a good time. And sometimes you just need to recharge your battery and be alone and refuel because you're depleted from being in big groups. This is akin to the Forer effect, where in one sentence you say two opposite things that cover everyone, and the person you're talking to latches on to the accurate thing and not the inaccurate thing.
And DJ knows firsthand what he's talking about.
Many years ago, when I was a professional magician, I branched out from doing just magic shows, and one show I started doing that I really enjoyed was as a psychic entertainer. And I would like dress in a white turtleneck and wear a little amulet. You know, I'm 19, 20 years old. So I remember one of these performances in particular, a woman hired me for her husband's retirement party. And I spent the first half of the show doing magic tricks, but dressing them up as psychic powers. So I'd cover a match with a wine glass and look at it and grunt and exert myself and show my psychic abilities and make the match stand on its head. Okay, so magic tricks. Then I said, for the second half of the show, I'm going to have to excuse myself. I need to meditate. I need to put myself in the right frame of mind. And I went to the restroom and stayed there just for 10 minutes and did nothing. Basically to make people wonder, you know, what the hell's going on? And when I came out, my persona, my demeanor was different. I was not somber, but I was quiet. So the second half of the show, I said, I just meditated. I've combined my 5 senses. I've created a 6th sense. And while I was meditating, some images came to my mind of everyone around this table. And I did some sort of off-the-shelf cold reading. Some vague generalities and let folks fill in the gaps. So, long story short, everyone enjoyed that except the man who was retiring. He was a little skeptical, crossed his arms, leaned back, and he said, okay, fine. Tell me what happened to me today. And there's not a whole lot you could do with that, right? I said, well, you may think I'm fishing here, but all I can do is tell you the images that come to my mind. I sense that in the last day or two, you've heard from someone you haven't seen in a long time or you haven't yet met, either male or female. And everybody sort of chuckled because that doesn't seem like psychic powers. But he leaned back and he said, well, actually, my daughter called and she's pregnant and they don't know if it's a boy or a girl. And that was an amazing hit, right? I'm sure I said other things that weren't hits, but what do people remember? Again, you remember the hits and forget the misses.
DJ says that in the case of Peter Hurkos, he also had another trick up his sleeve, and it had to do with the way that he spoke English. Both Hurkos, who was from the Netherlands, and Uri Geller, who was from Israel, often benefited from the pronunciation of their words.
So, as an example, let's say I have a thick accent and I look at someone and I tell them I'm getting a vision and I say, I see a duck. Now, that sounds goofy, right? But that could land with a believing sitter as maybe the name Doug, or maybe I'm talking about a dog, or God, maybe a duck, right? I know it sounds really silly, but Hurkos would actually claim to see psychic visions. And when he'd talk about them, he'd describe his visions, often actually using nonsense words, and wait for his credulous audiences to actually do the interpreting for him.
I couldn't find a surviving audio clip of Hurkos doing this specifically. But this point is interesting in the case of Jim Thompson, because when Hurkos went to the Cameron Highlands and the house where Jim was last seen, the Dutchman started his visit by walking around the Moonlight Bungalow's garden, almost like a bloodhound trying to catch a scent. He then sat down on the porch and laid out a photo of Thompson and a map of the Highlands area. He put one hand on the photo and one hand on the map, and he started to contort his face as if in serious concentration. He then began talking in incomplete thought fragments that, when put together, suggested that Thompson had been sitting on this very porch when a friend of his, a baby or a preppy, approached, and they went for a walk together. And then later, 14 people in a military truck captured Jim and gave him drugs, possibly morphine. Hurkos' assistant, Stephanie Farb, would later transcribe the recording. But in that transcription, she said that Hurkos had clearly mentioned the name Preeti, the name of the former Thai prime minister, now exiled in China. But Lieutenant Horgan, who was also in the room, who wrote a separate report of the event, never mentioned that Hurkos said the name Preeti, although he did say something like baby. But at the time that Farb had gone on to transcribe the reading, William Warren suggests that she was by then well aware that Preeti was the name of Jim's friend who had been ousted in a coup and was somebody who was being talked about as potentially associated with Jim's case. And it would have been easy to say that this is what Hurkos meant all along. It was just his accent that got in the way. Hurkos also did some more unscrupulous things. In the early 1960s, he was tried and then found guilty of posing as an FBI agent who was on his way to help solve the kidnapping of Frank Sinatra Jr. The incident occurred at a gas station in Wisconsin, and the station attendant served as the primary witness in the case. At the trial, Hurkos testified that he only told the service station attendant that he was with the police, not that he was the police, and that the attendant must have simply misunderstood him because of, you guessed it, his use of English. DJ points out, however, that by impersonating an FBI agent, Hurkos was more likely trying to gain an advantage by getting to see a crime scene. He might later then be able to offer up specific details from the location, but present those details as if they had just come to him in a fresh psychic reading that he was doing for audiences. Hurkos' impersonation of an FBI agent didn't stop people from believing in psychics, and the lack of scientific data that suggests that psychic powers are real hasn't stopped people's belief in them either. Shows like The Montel Williams Show or even Larry King have continued to promote and present psychic celebrities as people with real and authentic powers, And promoting these types of psychics is harmful for so many reasons, especially when it comes to police investigations.
The real problem with this is that, frankly, it wastes police resources. So either police tell a grieving family of a missing person, "We don't believe in psychics. I know that you do, but we're not going to follow up on the leads the psychic said he or she has in this vision." And then that family says, "You know, why aren't you helping me? I want this help finding my missing loved one." Or if they follow up these fake leads, then they're actually getting distracted from real investigative leads. And that is a waste of resources. And if someone's been kidnapped and the family's been told that they're dead, but there are still leads to pursue, but the family says, "No, we now believe he's dead," you know, police have limited bandwidth. Maybe they move on to the next case.
DJ says that at the end of the day, psychic detectives like Peter Hurkos or Sylvia Brown are taking advantage of people's grief. And unfortunately today, psychic detectives have gotten far more sophisticated than Hurkos ever was. Today, psychics engage in what are called hot readings, where psychics employ an assistant who often does research on a case or a person beforehand and then feeds that information to the psychic.
This is something John Edward, the other TV celebrity psychic, would do in a show, and he was actually caught doing it and exposed for doing it on Nightline, and I think, you know, one of those 2020s, this is many years ago, where people coming into a show would fill out cards about what they needed his psychic advice on, or his psychic mediumship, because remember, he said he was talking to dead people, and then he'd regurgitate that later during his readings without them knowing he had access to, maybe during a break, the stuff they wrote down. This is actually not unlike the TV preacher and the faith healer Peter Popoff, whose wife and assistant would speak into his hidden earpiece about specific people in his church and their illnesses. And he'd hear this through his earpiece. You know, his wife would say, "Hey, Petey, that guy in the third row back, four over, you know, he has a back problem." And Peter Popoff would claim to have a word of knowledge from God about that illness.
Some debunkers actually accused Hurkos' assistant, Stephanie Farb, of collecting information from others and giving it to Hurkos in advance of a reading. But there was never any concrete evidence to expose her for participating in hot readings. Whether or not Stephanie Farb and Hurkos were complete frauds is an important question to ask, but it's not the only one. And there does seem to be a big picture here.
A rational person could look at all this and say, "Okay, well, some people are idiots and they're going to be duped by psychics, but what's the harm? People believe all sorts of nonsense, no big deal." And to that I say, phooey. Ignoring the methods, you just look at the effect, the impact of what they're doing, and you realize that sincere and emotionally hurting, emotionally vulnerable people are going to these psychics to get direction, to get advice about the most central and important aspects of their lives. They'll give relationship advice, even though they're not family therapists. They'll get financial advice. Sylvia Brown will actually tell people, "Don't marry this person," or "Do marry that person," without even knowing who she's talking about. So these are unscrupulous hucksters who use psychological tricks or sometimes just brazen confidence to get their victims to part with their money. And I mean, it'll blow your mind, but there are even psychics who specialize in giving corporations advice. There are corporate psychics advising on this merger, or, you know, what to do about this business unit. And just think about that. If a company actually does that, shareholders should revolt and replace the management, because that is not good management. And if you're going to be up in ire about a corporation hiring unqualified psychics, you should also care about the people duped into hiring unqualified individuals to give them advice on their finances or their love life or their careers without having any expertise in any of that.
So if celebrity psychics or psychic detectives don't have a great track record of helping to solve missing person cases, are there other approaches that might be used in solving a decades-long cold case? In our next episode, we're going to hear more from Lou Tumlin, who revisited the Jim Thompson disappearance in 2016. And we're going to hear what his analysis of the original search and rescue operation revealed about which theories can now be thrown out based on data and which ones he thinks are most likely to be true.